Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Jane Hoffman, and tonight we're going to discuss the active period in Milwaukee from 1967 to 68 that involved civil rights, fair housing, and the war resistance. I'm reading two pages of Michael Cullen's book that was written with Don Ranley called A Time to Dance. I'm only going to cover the burning of the Freedom House, and then I'm going to go to a clip by Father Grappi. I remember the night we were to march to the south side of Milwaukee for the first time. I arrived there with this big crucifix, and Jim said, we're going to use this tonight. And he said, oh no. He was sort of embarrassed because I wasn't one of the Jesus-stricken people, and I didn't want to be either. Now, it was said earlier in the book that Jim did not use religious symbols or speech a lot in his marches. But I wanted to say that we had the sign of crucifixion, and I thought we should use it. But then we had some reservations. Perhaps someone might grab it and use it as a weapon. Maybe Jim was afraid of that, too. Anyway, I went into the Freedom House with the crucifix, and I put it behind the door. It was a terrible, terrible night. We really did not think we were going to come out of it alive. When we got to Lincoln Avenue, we were sure we were going to be killed. The violence was so incredible. The streets were filled with so much hate. The bottles that were thrown, the fear, the hate, the spitting, it was a disease. It was as if the whole city had just vomited, as if everything that was sick in us was being vomited on the streets as we walked. The people spit on us. They threw rocks and bottles. He's talking about the whites attacking the blacks. We used our coats to cover our heads, but one girl was hurt by a Molotov cocktail. I was praying my rosary all the time. I always took my rosary along on those marches because that's the only thing I'm going to die with. It was a disease night, but a great night. It was the real beginning of the liberating of our heads and our spirits. We began to see what we had to do, what lay ahead of us, and the future held in store. Anyhow, by some miracle, we got back to the Freedom House. We thought nothing more was going to happen, and so we went home. When I arrived back home, I hadn't even gotten into the house when a call came saying the Freedom House was on fire. We went back immediately and was the place blazing. The streets were lined off. There must have been 250 police all over the place. Incredible times. The next day, someone took the burnt crucifix, my crucifix, and hung it on the outside of the Freedom House. I thought I would let it stay there for a few days, and then I'd pick it up and bring it home, but I never got it. Someone must have saved it as a relic. But the charred crucifix, the charred Christ, the charred cross, what a symbol for those times, for our times. Of course, the next night we went out again to the south side of Milwaukee, and the same madness went on, the same insanity. When we got back to the Freedom House, again the police were swarming the place. That was the first night I witnessed real police violence. I'll never forget some 200 policemen coming up the streets with their bayonets and their guns and their sticks and their blue helmets. They looked like blue devils out of hell. The people were aghast. The police started swinging at our feet, telling us to get on the sidewalk. Now, that's all I'm going to read maybe until later in the show, because this clip by Father Grappi about the burning of the Freedom House is goes right with this book, this passage I just read.
Yeah. tell us what happened last night.
Well, we got out of the bus, and someone threw a bottle or something, I don't know, but they started to throw tear gas bombs. They flooded the whole area with tear gas and threw them inside the house. The whole block was covered with tear gas, and police shot their rifles off up in the air and made everyone scatter. We were on 14th Street, and then we noticed the house was on fire. It started apparently from a tear gas bomb. Kind of was across the street, or he said it was a fire bomb. I don't know. They filled the house with tear gas. That's what started the fire. At least we burned the place down.
Who burned the place down?
Police burned it down.
It was there with a child, and she came stumbling out, and the police said there was a sniper. There was no sniper in there. They were shooting those guns off all over the place, up in the air, around here. And where they got the idea of the sniper, I don't know. Where is that tear gas?
Right here,
Now, see, this is what was taken out of the house. Well, that's a tear gas bomb.
Out of the house. This is what
out, of the, out of the house.
When I told everybody to move out.
This is some of the shotgun shells they were shooting off. With all that, we went through on the south side last night. There wasn't any guns fired. But they came here and they were firing those things like machine guns. We have a strategy meeting at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I don't know what decision the commandos are going to make as far as future action is concerned. We are very concerned about the attitude and the conduct of the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. Everyone built him up as such a great hero when there was this little disturbance on 3rd Street because he called in the National Guard immediately and put the entire city under a curfew. Well, for heaven's sake, we have a right to exercise our constitutional God-given right of free speech. That means protest, demonstration, whenever we want. We don't have to give any reasons for this. This is our constitutional right, and we have a right to get adequate and decent protection. Now, for heaven's sake, he had a white riot on the south side for the last two nights, and what did he call for? A voluntary curfew. He didn't have any voluntary curfew when a few blacks tore up part of 3rd Street. Well, that's a weekend. That's a double standard of justice.
Yeah, he called heroes. What the hell do we call them out there throwing bricks and bottles at little kids and women, huh? Big heroes.
I'll tell you what, the mayor's always looking for an out. Man, that's that goes this way and that way, but never in the mayor's pocket.
And these stupid-ass cops standing around here throw tear gas in the house with 30 little kids walking in the house and shoot off their guns, got the kids scared to run out, and then turn around and set the house on fire. Now, what kind of police department is this?
Father,
do you feel that the
Negro ministers to call off your march?
I haven't heard from the Negro ministers. I understand there was something over the radio today by a Reverend Beauchamp. And I say again that the commandos of the NAACP Youth Council make the decisions for the NAACP Youth Council. What do you guys think about the Ministerial Alliance coming forth and saying we shouldn't march? Huh?
I don't give a doggone. Ain't on my right to protest. I feel like protesting. I'm going to protest.
Amen.
You understand?
Okay, I played 4 minutes of that clip, but this is John's birthday, and he's on the line. I don't want him to have to wait, and I'm sure Don has plenty of commentary because he lived in Milwaukee at this time. He was a young child, so I'll bring both of you in. Happy birthday, John.
Happy birthday, John.
Yay.
Yay.
You're the same age now that when Prince died.
Oh, I know. That's so nice, James.
Can you believe it? I've outlived them all. It's a war of attrition. Michael Jackson, down. Prince, down. Elvis, Whitney, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, all down, all gone. But Johnny Rodgers is still alive. Amazing.
The
you
Silver
forgot one of the
Street
greatest... You forgot one of the greatest
the
of all, Jerry Garcia.
Oh, yes. Didn't they name an ice cream after him?
Everything else, too. John, ties.
Yes.
John's the Silver Streak baby boomer. He's still marking off his generation.
I'm a tribute to a long life based on not being a drug addict.
But a rock and roll star nonetheless.
A legend
in my own mind. Well, here's what happened. You know, I didn't mean to really throw a temper tantrum last night, but my Blog Talk Radio bill, you know, it, Thank. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed your day, John, and we'll talk about it more too.
Cool.
I enjoyed Sebastian Cesari's post. Anyway, the Blog Talk Radio, the $39 package is cuts off tonight, and since Albert actually had a super delegate slated for our show last night, and it's too bad that guy couldn't come on, and I had to do the show alone for 20 minutes. Not that it's like a huge big deal. I've just kind of been kind of bored and melancholy over this break. And that's why I'm bringing all these. We had a 4-day vacation from the schools. And I just wanted to kind of wrap up the month of May with a bang. And I thought, I couldn't believe how aggressively Father Grappi spoke to reporters in those days. And he had black comrades with him. Don, were you surprised about how open he was to the press, like just calling out the police for their bad behavior?
Not at all. I was right there with him. And so I saw the aggressive nature of the civil rights protesters. You've got to know that they swelled near the end before the riots to probably a good 300 or 400 people a day. We were protesting every single day, walking up Wisconsin Avenue to Marquette, and so we were in droves of anywhere from 150 to 350, sometimes 400, and so it was a major protest, especially for a city.
Right, it wasn't like Chicago, New York, or you know, somewhere like that.
Exactly.
I mean, Milwaukee is a fairly big city, but it pales in comparison to Chicago, even. Now, would you guys mind if I played the last 90 seconds? Because he kind of mirrored what you just said. He quoted Frederick Douglass. So let me just throw this clip in. And John, we'll get back to your birthday greetings pretty soon, but let's take care of business first.
As far as disproving the attitude of hate and bigotry that exists out there, you certainly prove it.
Well, we've proven that, but we still do not have fair housing laws. You see, this neighborhood you're in right now is the Kilbert Town 3 project. They're taking 1,000 black families out of this neighborhood, and they're moving them out. Now, they're supposed to be relocating, but they aren't. But the black families that are moving out of this neighborhood have no place to go. There's discrimination even on the fringe areas. You see, there's no place for black families to go. We don't have any fair housing law. We know what the attitude of the people is on the south side, but we want a fair housing law. Now, that's one of our rights also, discrimination. The Archbishop came forth and said this. The Pope came forth and said this. Can in no way be justified. There's moral implications in a fair housing law, and that's what we're fighting for. That's what we're going to get. You see this house next door? The police nearly burned down her house last night. Now, she just lost her son in Vietnam 5 months ago. That house is going to be torn down. She has no place to go. We had a Marine come here. A guy spent 6 months in Vietnam, you know. Goes down to fringe areas. Lady won't rent to her, him and his wife because of black people.
Well, Father, has your marches to the south side accomplished anything so far for fair housing?
We're going to get fair housing not only for the city of Milwaukee, but we're going to get it on a national scene. And it's going to be this consistent type of courageous protest that's going to bring about fair housing legislation. Frederick Douglass talked about this 100 years ago. He said no one ever got their rights given to them on a platter. You've got to fight for it. You've got to struggle for it. And that's what we're doing. We're protesting. And we're going to keep agitating. We're going to keep protesting until we get what is ours.
That's it. That was the end of it.
Okay. Now, this is... Look at the general context. When he says that Milwaukee was segregated at that time, he meant it. There were only a few pockets of Milwaukee that could be construed as black. That would be the near north side. Otherwise, blacks had nowhere to go. The zoning, the redlining, everything that was involved, involved not including black residents. So it was a trying time for the city because the black residents grew to where there were there was enough food to contain them. And even now, if you look out towards Whitefish Bay and Nicolet and
Whitefish Bay is where Oprah and Cato Kalin grew up. Well, she didn't
right.
grow up there. She was transferred there after she moved in with a relative. But John,
right, you go out those ways. You don't see blacks at all to this day.
John, I want to include you in the conversation. There was quite a bit of segregation, but people living in Oakland, a lot of blacks were living up there. Did you notice anything in your childhood that stood out?
Well, when I was got my first job at 18, I was working at a place called HOTSE. My brother worked there. It stood for Hot Systems. And they make, you know, I've seen some of their product with the Denver Broncos would play. They'd have these space heaters on the sideline. And so the company made pressure washers and space heaters, kind of the same concept of the way they would heat things up. Well, anyway, working there, we had a couple guys, white guys, who lived in Oakland and who had to drive there, you know, back and forth. And he said, you know, there's certain parts of town just after 12, if you're white, you just don't go down the street. Like literally African-Americans would walk up to your car and start banging on it. And, you know, basically you just either leave or there'd be trouble. But I'm all for people, all Americans, all colors, getting the best health care, education, housing, opportunity for jobs. I'm all for that. But I do have to tell you, I don't think it's in the Constitution anywhere where you're guaranteed housing or health care or anything except the freedom to pursue your happiness, life and liberty. So I'm kind of torn on it. You know, obviously we have minorities that have been overly discriminated against. So you want to swing the pendulum back the other way. You know, I get that. But, I mean, my grandfather, when he was 15, he got kicked out of the Amish community, and he had to just go make it on his own. All his grandparents, they were Amish. They basically worked the land, you know. Now, it's a different culture. I mean, how do you, in Milwaukee, if you're a minority, how do you go grab some land and start farming it? You know, it's a different lifetime, but I'm the kind of person I would just, you know, get a tent, sleep in my car, just make it work. How do you do that if you have a family?
You know what?
That's another issue.
I think Father Grappi outlined pretty strongly because there was a place called this Viaduct Bridge in Milwaukee where they, like Don was mentioning, but you're probably not familiar with it because it was a geographic landmark. They they marched over that bridge several times. I mean, like, months on end, and Grappi worked for the passage of legislation which would outlaw discrimination in the buying and renting of homes, and then it was passed on a federal level known as the Fair Housing Act. So you have to realize that Milwaukee was as divided as Boston racially, and he was a white Italian priest, you know, and he was talking like in the wee. Like, he was talking about, if you heard the interview, you might have missed that point, but he said we when he was talking about rights. He didn't say them or I. So he embedded himself in the black movement. But also at this time, there were race riots all over the country. It was 1967 and 68. There was the Watts riots and other riots going on. People think there's upheaval now in this country. I mean, like they said in the television interview, there were firebombs being thrown into this Freedom House. I think it was some kind of local neighborhood thing. And there were kids inside, and the cops were throwing, like, bombs inside the house. So this was no game-playing type of thing. It was serious business.
Well, Christ certainly said the kingdom of heaven, you know, suffers violence. And those who take it, you know, take it by force. So, I mean, basically, if people standing up for the rights, you're going to have confrontation, and there's going to be physicality, and some people are going to get killed. So you have to choose your battles. And if it's for a good cause, freedom cause, a just cause, stand up and, hopefully people will unite. So I'm all for that. But it
I
is
think
one of
nowadays
those...
it's like Don was mentioning on the show last night that certain blacks would only want to go so far on Saturday night. That certain blacks would only want to go so far, and then they kind of want to halt their freedom and privilege because they're afraid of losing things. So in parallel what you just said, John, I'm just going to read two sentences out of this book, A Time to Dance. Mike Collins, the one talking, he's the author. Jim Groppi has been a guy who has never caused trouble that was socially acceptable. He caused the right kind of trouble. He rattles people's consciousness. He was swimming upstream when everyone else was coming down, and that's the only thing we as Christians can do. That's what the times demand. As Christians, we have to become men and women who stand apart from the system. We are very critical of our culture, of our religion and politics. For this, we are ostracized. For this, we are not understood. We may not act in the most diplomatic way, but we're not interested in diplomacy. We are interested in truth. We are interested in justice. We are interested in the right thing to be done. And we dare not sit around waiting. Okay, I think people were bolder in those day and age. People didn't just back down, because it was their moment of truth. It was ripe for the civil rights and all that. Don, are you still in the picture, Mr. Milwaukee?
Yes. Yes, I am, and all of that what you said was as close as I can recall. This was something where we were striving to be the best, like John said. We were striving to make a protest. We had no choice. Our boundaries were closed south of the viaduct. You were talking about the 27th Street Bridge. We also had the 36th
yes.
Street. And we would walk over those every day too, and it would be amazing seeing all these people in a peaceful protest. But there would be masses and masses, and the South Side was forbidden, and we crossed the line, and in a defiant way. And we didn't go too far, believe me. We went to the end of the bridge and pretty much stopped and turned around. But it was just the idea of it all. The blacks going to the south side of town, the railroad tracks, Miller Brewery, Milwaukee Braves baseball, Milwaukee County Stadium, which is now Miller Park on the right next to it. But they were all where blacks weren't allowed to live. And now they're not overly integrated, but they're integrated. And that's saying something. Milwaukee, but but we were talking about
thanks for clarifying that. I want to see if John agrees with this statement. There's this he says, to be nonviolent, one has to be creative. Violence does not demand creativity. There's a spiritual poverty in this society. Nonviolence is a spiritual weapon. Martin Luther King was beginning to understand this. Chavez is a great help. Resistance, yes, boycotts, but more than this, real change is needed. We can't just become part of a society making it so that we do the same kind of exploiting and the same kind of corruption. We dare not just move into society as many labor unions have. We dare not think of high salaries and fringe benefits if they are at the expense of others, and they usually are. So, John, do you agree with this statement? Nonviolence is a spiritual weapon.
I think for some. I think it's not effective for everyone. And I'm a very nonviolent person. I'm a very kind of negotiator, laid back, calm kind of force. And I get a lot of stuff done with a lot of people. But that being said, it's not effective in a lot of situations. Sometimes you just need brute force, or you need violent threat, not even violence, but the threat, the potential that you can do violence to make some people back down. So I don't I realize that's not my strong gift. I'm 5'6", about 140. That doesn't suit my dynamic. Now, for Slick, my musical brother, 6'5", 240, yeah, that works great all the time. You want a roughhouse, call Slick. And it's very effective. He gets what he wants. But that doesn't work for me. So, I've gotten to a point in my life where I accept people for their gifts and for who they are. But I would like everyone to be calm and peaceful and all that kind of good stuff. But no, it doesn't always work usually, especially with violent people. It doesn't work.
Well, do you think that dialect alone cannot influence people nowadays? You were saying the other night, like some people could just throw a lot. Not everybody's capable of turning over a police car. In the same vein, what is the nature of integrity of modern-day protesters? They certainly don't seem to be as noble as the one from the 60s and 70s, but we've become more of a me culture, and we're less unified. Yes, Don?
The protesters of today are wusses. They're really, you have to congratulate them on their energy, but their sustainability, their persistence wane really kind of sad, because, and then they fragment. Whereas back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s when we were doing this, we were there. I mean, if we need to go to city council every week, we'd go to city council every week. If we needed to be at a union hall, if we needed to strike, my mom, we would be on the picket line every day. You know, and then we'd go on indefinitely. You would take months, 4, 5, 7, 10 months. You could be out doing whatever it is that you're trying to rectify. These protesters today have no vim or vigor or persistence or sustainability in their protesting. They've got the right motives and the right energy, but they just don't have the capability of sustaining what they're doing for a very long time.
I guess I shouldn't really knock the modern day protesters. I'm just wondering, the breadth and the depth of the leadership, like they had priests, they had the Students for a Democratic Society, SDS, they had sit-ins, they had teach-ins.
That's your key, is that back then we would kill our opponents. We would kill our perceived enemies. Nowadays, they don't do much killing.
I think a lot of that's a product of we don't have testosterone anymore. You know, I mean, 110% pure. I used to joke about this.
John's right. It's in your diet. It's in our diet. It's in our water, the fluoride. We're talking, there's altrazine. There's something that is in some fertilizer.
I mean, our culture has changed. 50 years ago, you had rock bands with dominant male rock singers. You had a culture where men ran families, where you could spank your kid, and it's all changed. Hold on a second, I have to speak to the devil.
Okay.
Continue.
And to that vein, we've got the LGBT debate, which is again about a diet situation where the diet that we've had with all these toxins and poisons, it's altitude poisoning, if I know the term correctly, where you are putting changing people's DNA, changing their dynamic. They're metamorphosizing into something else that's not necessary. That's why obesity is so bad, because it is growing new organs in your body. You know, the human body is metamorphosized into something that it wasn't in the
past. What happened? Okay, I put John on mute just for 30 seconds because he was talking to his boss.
Right.
What happened to Jesse Ventura? I think his diet must be different because he has plenty of testosterone and has beaten up the media in numerous forms.
Right, but the thing is, though, is that you can have too much. That's what some of the muscle enhancer powders and drugs and shakes and things that these bodybuilders use. That's sans steroid, but you add steroids in there and you've got the capability of tearing all of your, you know, tendons and ligaments away from your body, muscles and bone because the...
Well, I have a question. Do you think the diet might have to do with somebody with a frame of mind, but the birth and the cultivation of a protester is not built on eating green vegetables. It's built on a evolution of a conscience and what you read and what kind of your influences are.
But
John, you're still on the line. I muted you for a second. You're back on.
James.
What's that funny talking in the back?
That's probably him and that's his boss.
Yeah, I'm going to mute him again. I hope he figures it out. So the birth of my conscience came in the basement watching annual shows on John F. Kennedy and how the Kennedys cared about social problems in our country and the deaths and the anniversaries of RFK and MLK being shot. That's where my birth of conscience came. It wasn't from not eating or drinking non-toxins or toxins.
You, first of all, yes, it did. The fact that you were growing up with relatively healthy food, not necessarily pasteurized milks and eggs, you know, with all the radiation. Your birth consciousness appeared when you had the nutrients in your brain to develop consciousness in itself. If you didn't have a healthy diet, which these kids, these people this day do not have, if you had a healthy diet, your brain functions much more clearly, much more efficiently, and you'll have an opportunity to develop a given, you know, a healthy or dynamic or a comprehensive consciousness. If you don't have the proper diet, if you're malnourished, if you are, you know, begging for something.
Okay,
to eat every
I get
day,
the gist of it. John's background noise disappeared, so I'm going to see what's... Hold on a second. John?
Sure. So I mean, back to my point, I mean, even if you take pop culture, years ago you had amazing lead rock vocalists. Nowadays everything's pop girl singers because of video. There aren't dominant male vocalists, you know, maybe Bono from like 20 years ago with U2, but you don't have your Robert Plant kind of singers, you know, that just stand out and would just, you know, be amazing, or guys like from Journey or Boston, Brad Delp, or Steve Perry or other. You just don't have a lot of soaring vocals. It's a lot of women singers, you know, with Celine and Whitney, Mariah, and so forth. But even culturally, families are run by women. If your kid misbehaves, you give them a timeout. Just there's a whole culture of just everything's kind of PC down, there's a lot more information. So when someone tries to act caveman like in our culture, we go, that's not sophisticated. We use a lot of political talk and we text and we do that kind of stuff. We have Instagram and you know, that kind of thing. So it's a different culture than in the past. There isn't, like I say, masculinity is gone. You know, we don't have it in our culture. They
except
have
for Donald Trump with his horsey voice.
Well, that's why he's he's come on so strong. It's like people go, finally, someone with, you know, some balls going out there and saying what he thinks. Even if it's wrong or even if it's irreverent, he's at least saying to stuff, you know, where we don't have that anymore.
But the guy is a super billionaire and has never wanted for anything a day in his life. He has no concept, none, zero, zip of what normal people want or need. That's my contention with him.
I guess my premise is I'm comparing the interview that I played at the beginning of the show of Father Grappi and black people speaking out in their own vernacular. Nowadays, when you're looking at protests like the ones for Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and even the coverage of certain kinds of war, there wasn't that much candidness nowadays as there was back then. Like, the reporters did not censor anything during the Vietnam War. We saw the dead bodies. We saw the mutilated bodies. People spoke out, and they didn't have to weigh and measure it the way that all the CNN talking heads do nowadays. It was what it was. And Father Grappi didn't seem afraid at all. He didn't see, like, Don talks about fear a lot. And I'm going to read this passage from this book, and John's probably going to be a little surprised, because the guy's from Ireland. He came over here. He was an insurance man, and then he opened up his own homeless shelter for people while his wife was pregnant with her third child. And I'm going to talk about this context of fear for a minute. The blacks were my brothers and sisters, and I wanted to be there as much as anybody. And so I threw myself into the whole question. It was the right thing to do. It was not the coerced thing to do out of fear. It was the right thing to do, and I had to do it. And then he went on to talk about the march and how the Freedom House got burned down. But I'm going to talk to Don about this Irishman's perspective. I was still an insurance man, but I must have walked in every one of Father Grappi's marches. And, oh, God, when I look back on those days, wow, the bottles and the Molotov cocktails. I mean, we really went into the heart of the revolution. It was not easy relating to black people because I felt what black people felt for white people, that all white people, liberals, intrude on them. And I was outraged inside when I was looked at in this way because I was not an American. At least I did not consider myself an American racist. I was an immigrant, and I knew what poverty was, and I knew what exploitation was, and it was not in keeping with my tradition to choose between men only on the basis of race. So he was being honest, saying that he didn't create the mess, but he was trying to be part of the solution.
And there were a lot of white. What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Okay, well, yeah, no, I think I met the guy you were talking about, but I'm not sure. This is a long time ago. But,
his name was Michael Cullen. Michael Cullen.
I don't remember. Okay, maybe I'm not. But the bottom line is that you got to – I was in the middle of everything that was going on, including integrating the schools there, my junior high, and helping integrate my high school. And so I was in the middle of everything that was going on in Milwaukee. But in kind, and when you just mentioned it earlier, alluded to it, the fact that it led to the Fair Housing Act. And so these are things that this went viral, as you could say today, but this went national. And those meetings that we were there every day. We were there every day. And very few other cities took a test or train that kind of. You know, this is something that that roused the entire country. And, you know, a lot, as per normal with everything that has happened wherever I live, I was right in the middle of it. But,
unfortunately, I was living in White Bear Lake, a white suburb, and I was nowhere near the pulse of what was going on.
Right.
Now, John was age 9. John was 9 in 67.
Yeah, no, I was 12. And
John,
I just have,
John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And the other thing that happened was that when the riots did happen, the night that we started burning, actually throwing Molotov cocktails in the businesses, and you know, the police were right there fighting with us. We left that night, went to Chicago, and their riots had just started. So we left and went to Indianapolis, and were able to seek refuge there for about 4 days. We came home, and then a week later,
really?
and then that, like the week before that, the box riot. So we went into L.A. 2 weeks later, pretty much right after the Watts riot. So we saw the country burn, and, you know, if you can understand why, then you can understand the plight of the African-Americans and the plight of all minorities from now on to the indeterminate future, is that we have this white hatred, and it's, you know, the only ones who really can stand up to it are the blacks. And they're going to be in it's happening right now, where the blacks are finally, that we are finally developing coalitions that are semi-sympathetic with our past and our history, that we might be a formidable force in the near future. But right now we're just waiting our time and in knowledge that our population is growing. There's many kids as they throw in the veils and try to kill. We're birthing them, and nobody else is. So we're looking at the fact that someday we'll be in a stronger position to serve America as opposed to being the scapegoats.
I hear ya. We have about 18 minutes left. Why don't we take a quick break? And, John, why don't you tell me what you did for your birthday?
Basically, I'm working all day and all night.
That's all like mine.
Yeah, which is okay. I used to work for a boss. He used to say Abraham Lincoln worked on his birthday, and George Washington did too. So I'm cool with it.
I make the most tips that I ever make, or have the best days on my birthday when I'm working.
Yes. Well, that's
and they happen to be coincidence and happenstance, because I don't tell anybody it's my birthday. It's just like I go to work, and then next day I know I'm being poured with you know, praise, or you know, poured down with money.
Yes. Well, I look at it as motivation for me to get my bills paid and change the situation. So it's okay. I've had plenty of birthdays. I've had plenty of celebrations. And as we talked earlier, you know, my other friends that I grew up with, I mean, I'm speaking of icons such as Prince or Michael Jackson or Madonna, you know, well, half of these people that we follow, they're dead. So they don't have any more birthdays. So I don't have to have the big celebration. I can focus and just do what I need to do. But some people just can't, they can't really, they need validation. And it is a good thing. There's a time for that, you know. Birthdays are a nice thing. But I can roll either way with it. And it's just not effective for me to buck the course, you know. I tell kids all the time, I said, you know, the thing about life is you either accept or you change it. And most of the time, acceptance is the best path. But if your cause is just, you know, then stand up and fight and change. But realize there's consequences for it. You know, you just have to figure out what your battles are going to be. So my birthday battle, I'm leaving it to the side. I'm just going to work my butt off.
Yeah, I went to work early today, too, because it's time and a half. So
nice.
I work from 4:45 p.m. till 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. So my hours up till midnight will be time and a half.
I see.
And by the way, I read an article today, but I just skimmed it, that millennials have this new – millennials are people like who were born from like 1988 on. They have this new tradition of having one month long birthday celebrations. And I guess it said that they're wasting all their money just on their birthdays and spending ungodly amounts of savings. But I didn't get to read the whole article. It was on Yahoo News.
Well, more power to them if they could do it. You know, some of that also kind of goes into the me generation. It's kind of everything's about me and being entitled to stuff. However, if you're not excited about yourself, who is? I say more power to you if you can do it. The role model I'm trying to keep is Christ, and he was a servant. He came to serve others, and he was concerned about others more than himself. So that's what I'm supposed to embrace. So it's kind of counter to our culture. It's all about what I can get. And, hey, somebody's got to do it. I hope somebody's getting it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think maybe we kind of live in a transient age, and maybe they're more, you know, celebrating their birthday seems more monumental. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. John, don't you have a June birthday coming? John, do you have a June birthday coming up?
June 18th. And, that John, again, hit it on the head when he mentioned that the me. And that sounded almost, you know, kind of like it's been going on since about the 90s, and this me is going to kill us. We were so we back in, literally and figuratively, back in the 60s, and, you know, and it was just an unusual time. You mentioned that we were looking at the dead bodies from Vietnam all day long on TV, and we saw firsthand, with the help of the Walter Cronkite of the world, what the world was. We saw what it really was, and we know that we don't know that tomorrow is guaranteed. So that's why one of my favorite sayings, and I've said it on the show before, is, the saying that goes is, live hard, live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse. And so that's what seems to be almost applicable to these millennials in this time. I always encourage people to invest in their retirement accounts. Please, everybody, anybody who's listening, make sure that you take out $10 or $15 or $60 a week in your paycheck, or whatever you can do to just build up a little bit of a nest egg, so that when you turn 60 or 55 or 70, you'll have something that you can live on. We've got a guy, he's not a professor, but he's from Switzerland, and he's bringing over the idea that they're utilizing right now in Switzerland of everyone's guaranteed an income. I forgot what the name of it is, guaranteed income. So that's an interesting
university.
It's just everybody gets money. Everybody gets money.
I was making a joke.
Oh, well, anyway. So we'll just have to see how this next 10 years.
John and I are going to be raptured, so we don't need a retirement.
No, you need a retirement, period. You know, unless you want to live by, you know, live fast, die young, and you guys aren't young anymore, especially John, and leave a good-looking corpse.
Okay, I'll make sure I got my Botox in me before I croak.
There you go.
John, do you have a follow-up to that? Oh, by the way, Father Grappi died at age 55 of brain cancer.
Right.
That was kind of sad.
Yeah, he was early, you know, he died early on, but I don't know what kind of living conditions he was in. He was associated with, I forgot, what's the name of the church?
St. Boniface.
Right.
By the way, he, towards the end of his life, he drove school bus, and he was named the head of the bus driver union.
Right.
I put John on mute.
Okay.
John, did you drop?
I hit a flat spot for wherever the signal goes by the water, and it usually drops when I'm in that area. Yeah.
Yeah, it dropped, and then all of a sudden it was on mute, but I didn't put you on mute, but you were on the mute button.
I called back in. So I probably automatically went to mute until you bring me back in. It was probably the deal.
Well, we have 9 minutes left, and I feel like we covered a lot of ground tonight. So, John, are you on strap for time, or what? Is she giving you more leeway because it's your birthday?
By the way,
she won't let him make phone calls at work. But here he is again. He can answer the question. He dropped again. Is your boss letting you make phone calls on your bloody birthday?
Never. No, I work for Hitler. I told you. I work for an unreasonable, unnegotiable terrorist. And that's just the way she's wired. So I don't try to change that. She's not 20 years old. That's just the way life is. And that's the gig. And I'm fine with that. So I do what I need to do when I need to do it. And that works. So that's what comes sometimes. I'll just.
Well, why don't you do your conclusion? What I'm trying to get at is, if you're on a time crunch, can you do your conclusion first? Because we only have 8 minutes till the hour's up.
Oh yeah. In fact, I'm always on a time crunch, and this next year will probably be even more dramatic. So yeah, it's definitely. My conclusion would be is that I do favor a post-tribulation. So while Jane Hoffman may be raptured and avoid all of these issues, I think that I'm prepared to go through to the last man standing. So I'm all good with that. You know, most people are looking for a way out, and if you get it, that's fine. But as Bruce Lee said, don't pray for an easy life. Pray for the strength to endure a hard and painful one. I'm kind of, I think that works better for me. Because if you're looking for help and you don't get it, you're screwed.
I'm in that boat right now. I want to run back to California and I can't.
Yeah. That's okay.
And
so that's my conclusion.
This is my plan.
Prepare for the worst. And if it doesn't happen, then, it's celebrate. It's a party. But I think most people prepare for the easiest, quickest solution. And not only that, they prepare. I deal with this all the time. People prepare for things to go exactly as planned. Like, the show's at 10 o'clock, so I will plan my life so that way, 3 minutes to 10, I'm ready. It's like life doesn't work that way. Plan half an hour ahead, an hour ahead, things that are consistently on a schedule. Disaster is going to happen, so prepare for it. And then it's not that dramatic. So I say it's not as bad as you think, it's worse. And if you're prepared,
I've heard that one before. By the way, I started 3 hours ahead of time last night trying to get into the BTR website, and I was prepared, and it didn't matter because it was still crashed.
Sometimes it doesn't help. But I tell you this: when I went to a divorce, there was a sign in the office that I went to, and I'll never ever forget. He said 90% of all emergencies are due to a lack of planning, and I found that in life to be pretty true, pretty accurate. Most emergencies, we know they're coming up. We know it's, you know, the flat tire, the sickness, the kids, or, you know, whatever. These are things that just come out of nowhere, but they're consistent. And most people have no plan in place for these things. And that's why they literally mess us up every time. So it's that's my nickel for tonight.
You can sign up.
I'm ready to sign up.
I hope you live until age 58.
I can take an early paycheck anytime, any minute. Not a problem. Or if I can, you know, war of attrition, if I go another 50 years, I'll outlive everyone and I can tell stories.
And you're telling them right now.
Yes.
Don, do you want me to go next or do you want to go next?
You go next. Go for it.
Okay. My conclusion is also based on a few things John just said. Okay, I'm just going to combine two thoughts. Father Grappi, I think he actually died at 50 of brain cancer because he was born in 35 and he died at 85. Somewhere around there, he died between age 50 and 55. He didn't waste time. He didn't care about what people thought. He did not fear going to jail. I was sitting up in my house today, worried about this, worried about that, wondering if I'll ever have enough money to move back, knowing that my 401k is growing rapidly with this job I've had for 3 years. But I really don't have anything to complain about. I'm in relatively good health. I have a son who's finishing high school. I can't predict the future. I can't control whether he wants to go to college. But one thing I can be is thankful. It was a peaceful, beautiful day in the mid-70s. And even though I don't have my family around, most of them, I have a few straggly relatives, I can be thankful for today, thankful I have a job and that I'm not out of work and that I can pay my rent. So right now I just have to be thankful for the moment and hope that I can achieve all my altruistic dreams and goals. And one of them would be to finish this screenplay I've been working on 25 years. I need prayer for that, and I'm glad to be sharing some of my research with our listeners. And I'm thankful for you guys, too, and I'm glad John made it another year, and I'll be back in California someday.
We'll be sure and notify Homeland Security when you make that decision.
You've already told me that every time I tell you I'm visiting. And my plan is to come in August before school starts again. And I'll be stopping through Reno on my way down.
Of course. And then we have to go to Vegas to see Britney.
I know, we haven't crossed that bridge yet. I'm waiting for John. One of us has to win the Powerball.
Okay, I got you. I got it covered because the ones, zeros, and 19s and any delineation of sevens will win the Powerball guaranteed. So that's of course.
Why do you say that?
That's according to Powerball data specialists, facility, you know, enterprises or whatever.
So if I pick a number like 27 or 17, I'd have a better chance.
17 would be a perfect number. 27 would be a good number. You know, 47. I don't think Powerball goes with 71. I haven't.
How about 57, John's birthday?
57 would be beautiful. That would be a number that you should go ahead and get out of the house tomorrow morning, first thing, and put $20 on. On what was it, 17, 27?
$20? I'm in gambling treatment. I'm only paying $2.
I forgot. Sorry. My bad. But anyway, okay.
Like John says, after the show in 60 minutes, the conversation gets warped.
All right. Well,
oh, John,
I'll
play one of your songs to end the show. Oh, shoot. Right, John dropped again. John dropped again.
Yay.
John, you're here. It said that you dropped twice on my caller board.
I did. I called back in.
Came back in.
Okay, now it's midnight. You can call back in. So should I play Tell It to My Heart, New Way, or Carry On? That's the only ones I have queued at work.
Wow.
Well,
you don't have the song all the way, do you?
Let me get my conclusion real quick.
Oh, go for it.
Okay. Sorry, Don.
No problem. I just wanted to say, don't worry, be happy. If you need, everybody just enjoy themselves. I've been blessed, and I don't think I've had a difficult day, but I was in or out, if people know what I'm talking about. Every day is beautiful, and I just enjoy it, have fun. Never had any money problems. Don't have any relation. Never had relationship problems. Never paid for a date in my life. I don't understand what people do to make their lives so rough and complicated. I'm just laughing. But other than that, everybody, God bless you. Good luck.
Nice ending. I couldn't find any of John's MP3 things. John, I have the Alone song. What's the whole title?
Oh, I think it's just Alone. It's probably like a rock song. Actually, one of my favorites, if that's the one I'm thinking of.
Okay, I'll play it, but it's not cued, so there might be a slight bit, not much background noise, but a little. So here we go. Have a great rest of your birthday. Well, now it's midnight in Minnesota, so it's May 31st, but have a good night, Don and John. And Don, why don't you listen to the beginning of it just to honor John's birthday, okay? Thanks for sharing your history of Milwaukee, Don. Good night.
Oh, sure. I've got a history of a lot more places than that, but no problem. Milwaukee's my hometown. When we're all done, this world
That was a technically good song, John, if you're still on the line. Oh, everybody dropped. Good night, everybody.